All right, everybody, welcome to Chad Watch. I'm Chris Oa, my co-host Kyle Miller.
What's up?
All right, we got a great show with you for you today, and with us we have Eric, our buddy from Highlands Grow, and he's going to talk to us today about just kind of the market. We'll talk a little bit about like how we met Eric and stuff. Both Kyle and I have a relationship with him outside of Chad Watch, and you know, I think I enjoy talking with him. I think he has a really good set of experiences and just like an understanding of the market. And I think it'd be good for everybody to kind of hear what he has to say. So I'm glad he's on the show with us today. Thank you, bro, for coming on.
Thanks for joining us, man.
Likewise. Thank you so much, gentlemen. The privilege is mine.
Awesome. Thanks, man. So I thought we would, it's a good episode to be on, bro. There's a lot of stuff kind of happening in weed world right now, you know, other than like the market and just in things being how they are in general, selling weed, there's a lot of stuff. So I think we'll roll into the news. I think one of the biggest things is Andrew Brisbow being resigning. I think he's like the head of like traffic zoning or some bullshit like that.
It's an administrative job within the agency.
Construction codes.
Sure.
Yeah, that's not like leaving it to open up like the legalized mushroom trade or like, you know, the cocaine lounges or even casinos or anything. You know what I mean? Like that's not a
seems like a demotion.
Yeah. That's what we all joked. We were like, did Brisbow nail Mrs. Lara's wife? Like what's going on over there?
You know? Like, I can tell you, gentlemen, from my experience, so that's it's interesting. So I come into this space from the construction equipment rental world. So I was a part of the ancillary. That's how I got exposed to the cannabis industry formally, was through recommending equipment for contractors for builds. And that's, you know, it was a huge, huge component. So for all of his headaches with Lara, I think that he is now well suited to take that on from the construction side, because look, as much of the you've heard about regulations and clauses and all those different line items. I mean, there are several that he's going to be experiencing on that in that office too. So from the clerical side, it does look like he's well prepared to take on the role. So I'm happy for him.
No, for sure. I mean, I believe that Brisbow is like number one pencil pusher in all of Lara. You know what I mean? Like absolutely. I'm not saying, you know, it's just I just think something had to have happened, you know, anyway, so we have lots of hypothesis, and I will say I was at the MICIA meeting or event last week, as were all of you guys. It was great seeing everybody.
Good times.
Yeah, and we talked to like the person that Lara sent like to be Brisbow, because obviously not a good day for him to show up, you know. I think it was like the day after it was announced, and that guy was pretty cool, you know. Like he definitely, like, everybody loves Brisbow is kind of the motto over there. Like whether it's true or not, like it seems to be. Like I think he's well liked with all of his colleagues. I like him from the industry. I think he was a good advocate for us. And one of the things that this rep from the CRA said, and this is really important, especially for people like me, especially who's so critical on these guys on some stuff, but you know, they know what's going on as far as like the THC stuff and like lab shopping and this other shit. Like, you know, they want a reference lab. You know, he says that they requested in the budget. For their budget next year if not funds to build a reference lab, like the funds needed to like study the feasibility of a lab or whatever bullshit you have to do in the government before you can spend money. So like, it's not like the stuff's not lost on them. You know, I think that like, there's a good culture of like understanding they need to work on that stuff. And I just wonder if Brisbow maybe wasn't like too aggressive or not aggressive enough, or, you know what I mean? If some of this didn't like, I don't know. So I'm pretty sure it's a political reason. I just think it's going to be hard for us all to gleam out what it really was.
My biggest concern was that usually in these types of cases, like, you kind of know who's in the wings, right? Like, and that to me seemed like it was palpable that not a lot of people were, or maybe I'm just not privileged to that information, but it seemed like there was a lot of unknown that was created immediately. I'll tell you what, I'm going to miss the socks. If he changes the socks, guys, in this new office, I'm going to be beside myself, because now we're going to really have some questions on integrity.
They're going to have little like road road lines. Yeah, little like road cones and shit and
bulldozers and excavators. Yeah. And yeah.
So yeah, no, it'll definitely be interesting to see how that plays out. I think that was probably the biggest piece of news from the last couple of weeks. Another thing that I think continues to be just nuts to think about, and I think is probably a testament to Brisbo, is, you know, so last month in July, I think that was like the highest month of sales, retail sales ever for cannabis. And I want to say it was something like 200 million, something like that. Kyle, do you remember the exact number? Or Eric?
I thought it was closer to 250. I'd have to look it up.
Yes, from my recollection, 211, I believe, was the end tally for that specifically. But it was crazy. And, you know, the other part, too, that we're really starting to see is you're starting to see those folks start to use a different term in the last month, which was compression, right? That you saw it kind of in a lot of the periodicals describing the market, the word compression, which instead of a consolidation or instead of a depression. And that was, to me, that was a sign of maturity. Like when that specific term hits the pages,
it's, can you describe how that's different? Like compression, like in a market when a market's compressed, just for people that might not have like the base, you know, the level of economics knowledge that you have, which is pretty advanced, bro. You know,
I don't know about that, right? And it's like it's also the same credibility as the weatherman when it comes down to it, because really you guys focus a lot on you know what's right and what's wrong, and I balance that across of like of what is and what isn't. Like I'm always looking at it, and we have access to the MarketScape, which I know pulls the LeafLink. I know a lot of people like Headset and as well as a Pistol, and there's plenty of other access to data through the through the Freedom of Information Act, really. Just how quickly you can get your hands on it. But the compression really was a lot of people have been just describing flour, right? Flour, the price of flour, the price of flour, the price of flour. Well, now you're starting to see, especially in these last couple months, like, you know, the whole thing with distillate, like the Cali pounds have now become Oklahoma leaders, right? So we know all about just how that skew. Well, okay, so now you're like, the people are looking at it like, oh, it's just distillate. Well, how do you make distillate? So that's another form of compression that you're seeing, where it's like, how much more can this market, like we've gone down 40%, we've gone down 50%, we've gone down 60%. So when you get down to those points, or when you get down to a bottom, really it's that last, like you can end up going down another 20%, but you don't know. Like you don't realize that you're basing it off of how much you're already down. So that compression period is something that we're seeing, especially across SKUs with the concentrates making its way into the flower. And then the other thing too, guys, a big thing too, that a lot of people are taking consideration, like what's the inflation, right? Inflation. It's a devil term recently, or a buzzword. And you think it's like our simple human brains here, like we try and objectify it, like, oh, 7%, like everything I own went up 7%. So like my value decreased by 7%. That's not necessarily the case. I mean, it's every single interaction that you have, or every single transaction that you perform on a daily basis goes up 7% on average. Like one could go up 40, one could go up one could go up 3. So it's those different types of values just affect people differently. And that's why, so with this last month, everyone like actually viewing it as a compression, they're just starting to see that, oh, like, I can't insulate myself necessarily against what these other producers are creating and what they're doing. Like you could be running the best cultivation in the state right now and still be kind of like looking around at others and being like, I'm going to be thrown into the same bucket as you, regardless of I'm the best or I'm the worst.
That's an interesting perspective. You mentioned, you know, market prices obviously, and, you know, down 30%, down 40%. What, in your opinion, do you think, how much farther do you think that will go? Or do you think we're kind of stuck where we're at for a while, leading into Croptober, obviously? There's a lot of speculation.
Well, my opinion would be that it would be really tough to pinpoint onto like $1 amount. Like, I think that my goal across the board, like I know that we've talked too, and what's the number that's come up? It's been that five, like, hey, you're going to make it if you can get your price per pound down to 500. Like if you can survive that, if you can withstand or endure that. And a lot of people need to remember that that also includes your price per trim too. Like you have to, that it includes the top, the buds, the seeds, and the trim and biomass. Like that, that number is included in there. So that $500 is maximum pain, I think, for all the whole state, everybody. But I would really like to start seeing more of an individual attention taken to like different cultivars based off of a lot of like the if-thens, right? Like we can't just say like, oh, every single plant that I have in my facility or in my grow, like it's going to yield the exact same thing that's worth the exact same amount at any given time. Like it's just, that's just an impossible concept to wrap our heads around. Yet when it's convenient, we willingly go toward it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think there needs to be like a, just the way that think people value this stuff in the market is, unfortunately, man, I think a lot of times, even if people think they're being sophisticated about it, they're like, I have to sell the shit that has the best demand. That's high THC shit. And you know, if it's high THC, I'll pay more for it. If it's high THC and it looks good, I'll definitely pay like whatever the tolerance on the market is for the highest, you know? So like it cuts both ways, you know what I mean? But unfortunately, the high THC seems to be the
king.
That's king, unfortunately, because everything's based on how fast it moves and how fast you can get your money back out of it. Yeah. You
know? Oh, without a doubt. And I don't think that that's necessarily going to go away for a little while here but I will say too that we are starting to see some uptick in the price based off of just like the general availability. I think like that this is almost going to be that calm before the storm. Like I know Croptober is really easy to get your eye, like your a bullseye on Croptober, a focus on Croptober. And as I'll get into it in a little bit here too, you know, we started during Croptober. That's where we unveiled as a company, was during last year's Croptober. That was our first toe in the market. So like what a perfect time for a new indoor that's like trying to take everything as seriously as possible, get after it, do it the right way. And then you just welcome to the show, right? Here's the market. Mm-hmm. Here's Croptober. So
tough
with the
time to get
the
in, man.
Yeah.
Props
yeah.
for that.
And it's been a bumpy fucking 12 months ever since too, fam, you know?
So, I'm a sucker for pain first and foremost. I'm only comfortable when I'm uncomfortable. We kind of share in that regard too. And I can speak to the cows come home about how like, you know, it's a blessing and a curse because although our unrealized expectations may have been a little bit more higher, so to speak, in the beginning, at least we were able to come to terms with it really quick and adjust. Mm-hmm. You know, like you get used to running your business and making X amount of money, and then all of a sudden you don't. If you don't adjust or you're not flexible or you're not able to trim accordingly, then yeah, you're going to find yourself in a pickle. And we're starting to see that that's not even just small outfits that are subject to that. You're starting to see
sure.
it heavily in these big cats too.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that time is right now where there's a lot of people that have been comfortable for so long because they were operating early in MMFLA, who didn't really plan for the market.
And there was no competition at all, you know? Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. So they were slaying it.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, what,
yeah, sorry. Sorry, Kyle. What I was going to say
mic troubles.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get that going. No, man, but like, yeah, everything you guys are saying is spot on. Like the common citizen just had to lay off all the people at one of their outdoor grows and shit. Mm-hmm. Like, and we can talk shit about all we want about common citizen, but they've got like so many stores and shit and so many like white label relationships. It's crazy to me to think that they can't make the outdoor grow work because that's like the bread and butter of like 60% of all the fucking products on the market, man. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
Like, it's distal. You know, like, you know what I mean? Exactly. Like, yeah. Like even if you have the shittiest stores in the world, like you have to, I can't believe that there's not a scenario where they can take all of their own outdoor and turn it into different bullshit and sell it amongst like, you know, break it down into like 50 or 60 SKUs of products, you know, like it's just, I don't know. So if these guys are having problems, like that's nuts. I also don't necessarily believe that whenever we see, when we see like a Loom or a Common Citizen or somebody like break down a facility or lose it or something, like, I don't know that it's necessarily because they're doing super bad or like they're about to go out of business. I think a lot of times they're cutting the fat. They're doing what you're describing. Yeah. Yeah. They're cutting the fat somewhere. And then, like, for example, Loom opened up a dispensary in Grand Rapids a few weeks ago. And like, you know, the Common Citizen people, I believe they're like on a rampage, like shadow purchasing a bunch of dispensaries all across Michigan to expand their footprint. And, you know, they have a bunch of relationships on white label, putting their dirty ass booth and distillate and a whole bunch of celebrity products and just, you know, stuff from people that don't know any better, you know? And so I think like this market gives those people the same advantages and disadvantages that it does to all of us, you know, and they just are able to leverage it better, I think, because they're highly capitalized. Now they can hit this stuff at a loss for quite a bit before it starts to be like a serious problem.
Yeah. And there's a, you know, the macro variables too. And I know that's like a 20-cent word, macro variable, but like think about something as simple as what are the different realities that the entire industry face. So like objective headwinds, most recently it ended up being, expiration dates, right? Like for the first time in a long time, a lot of people were like, hey, how old is this stuff? Right. So for a smaller grow, that's much less of a problem. It can be a problem, but it's a much less of a problem than say the scale of a Common. So like, think about like them having all this product that doesn't necessarily meet the objective criteria of the general population now, like, whoa, I want fresh. I want something within, what is it? 90 right. days, 120 days. That hasn't really been designated.
So now it's like the new THC with purchasers now, you know?
Oh yeah.
You know?
Oh yeah.
For sure.
And that's where it gets really tricky with those big outfits, because just by design, if they're the biggest, then they are going to have the most outdated product. So that's just, it's something that we're starting to see now, them making these pivots independent of the rest of the industry. And I know we've mentioned it before, but like, what are they going to do? They're going to probably just put it all in distillate. Like, let's be honest. So,
exactly. What else are you going to do with it?
Exactly.
Fire sale it for, you know, a super cheap price, but how much cheaper can you get when, you know, when good pounds are $800, $700, your 6, 7, 8 month old weed, you know, you can't fire sale it much, much lower.
Yeah. And they're hitting the same wall as all of us, you know?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
They are. And they have I'm not going to say phenomenal, but I mean, they do really well on wholesale side, guys. Like, I mean, dispensaries that we know, love, and respect and appreciate that are in direct competition, literal, the tiniest fish possible next to these sharks, but they are actively stocking those SKUs on their shelves because of how cheap the wholesale side is from that side too. So you have that working against them or working against you, but like, I just don't understand how operators can willingly plant these poison pills in their inventory. So that's a question that I ask a lot. But at the end of the day, what does it come down to? It's just that dollar amount, that price. It's just a deal that they can't refuse, or their principals got a hold of it, or they got a hold of their principals and the principals made the deals in front of or ahead of the inventory folks. So
yeah, there's a lot of that. Yeah. And that's one of the points we want to hit today. So, you know, before we get too far, because this has already been awesome, Eric, why don't you tell us about yourself, a little background on you and the company Highlands Grow. One of the things I've always been really impressed with is I think right from the beginning, you guys seem to have like a really healthy respect of the pre-existing industry and culture. And I like that you guys are association members. That's really, you guys have been pretty active and vocal in that. So I just really just like everything I'm seeing even before meeting you and stuff, man. But I just want... one of the parts of the show is like, you know, we talk mad shit about a lot of people, but we also want people to know that like the reason we do that is because we really do believe that most of the small operators are doing things the right way. And it's people being assholes that is the exception to the rule. And we want to acknowledge that and show people that, you know, like there are a lot of good operators. We want to highlight you guys and help you be able to tell people your story. Cause I do believe that all things being equal, people want to support people. That they agree with. And I think that we should, you know, we need to do our part to give you guys that platform. So.
No, thank you very much. Both of you have been just fantastic to interact with too. And I seriously, the story starts with both of you, like looking at what you guys did and a lot of the other folks that, you know, just the grassroots level 14, 15, in some cases longer ago than that, years ago than that. So about us, we're out of Lapeer. We got the first cultivation license granted to us in Lapeer. Someone had to actually pass away on city council, if I'm not mistaken, or in the local government for that to happen. And although we didn't wish it, you know, that's the reality of these types of organizations and businesses. Like in some cases, something as serious as that has to happen in order for you to even get your foot in the door. But the family business itself comes from three generations of at-home hospice and healthcare. And they ran offices in several states. There still is a contingent of the family that is involved in that side. But our wing of that family is through Bree and Matt Sagman. And they about 2.5 years ago, just started really reviewing a lot of the hospice and feedback from our information from the hospices over in the offices in Arizona specifically. And that kind of segued into Matt getting involved with the local caregivers. So out of the Canton, Livonia, Plymouth, in some cases, Ipsy. So Matt, our chief cultivator and our owner, he specifically got involved with the caretakers and just learned, right? Drank from a fire hose, got his hands on plants, got his hands on an understanding of just what it takes to do what you need to do to the actual plant, the individual plant, or like what kind of credit you need to give. And from there, they just made the decision, you know, like, hey, this is what I love to do. We love this. Let's get after it. Let's take a leap. And so they had pursued a property in Auburn Hills that did not come through. So they ended up happening upon the place in Lapeer. We're in the downtown industrial complex. They got everything all set up for their first harvest last Croptober, of course, as we mentioned earlier. And, you know, we only had four cultivars, but we were liking what we were seeing. And that was before I had come aboard. So I'd spent the last 9 years in blue chip construction equipment rental position straight out of grad school. I went to Central Michigan, fire up chips, did a,
me too.
Heck yeah, brother. I did a graduate teaching assistantship there, and I was able to teach while pursuing my master's and doing organizational communication, public speaking, helped out a lot with the capstone class. I did a lot with the social justice through dialogue in the office of the Multicultural Center up there, Multicultural Studies. It was a, you know, you're looking at it and you're like, this 5'9" white boy from Livonia, like, what the heck were you doing all that sort of stuff for? And it was really because of that fact. You know, I myself grew up in a town that was the whitest city in America with a population of 100,000. So even getting to Central, which isn't really necessarily that much more diverse, it was an eye-opening experience for me. And that was also the first time that I'd actually been full send introduced to cannabis as a concept. You know, I was a very sheltered Roman Catholic boy, 9 years of parochial school, 4 years at private, but never touched the stuff until the very tail end there. And I tell you what, I told my students all the time, you know, if you want to pass college, you want to get through this, smoke weed and go to class. Right? Like there is no better way to actually get involved with your teachers and your in your classes and to care about your coursework than to actually give yourself the opportunity to open your mind. And even in that, like, I guess what that like stereotypical like way, but like my niche that I've been carving out, gentlemen, is really just, hey, you can still be really productive and be a stoner. You can go to class, you can go to work, you can get things done that you need to get done. You can control a lot of the daily vices and still get after it. You don't have to be the non-punctual, the procrastinator, the hey man, like there still is a fine balance to it. So, but we have just hit the ground running. I put together a great team. It's not just me. Like I told you guys before, a lot of this is just 99% mustache. The other 1%'s me. The team that we have, so we looked at it when I came aboard. I came aboard with the idea that I don't know shit. All right. Like I know about weed. I know about getting high. I know about the I've looked into all the medicinal benefits. I've listened to thousands of countless pro con political debates on cannabis, you name it, done my homework, made my stance. But this is something entirely different. Like you can know cannabis like the back of your hand, but do you know retail? Do you know customer service? Do you know B2B sales? Do you know SAAS. You ever see every acronym we can possibly provide you? Do you know those things? Because if you want to do well here, you're going to have to know those things and know cannabis. And the only way to learn is to do what we did. My counterpart, Ryan, and I, we logged miles. I think I got, 40,000 miles on my car in the first 3 or 4 months. Just going to every single... I'm not kidding. This is the home office. So it's, you go to all these places, and if you don't know about it, you ask questions. You learn, right? I think I've been to over 450 physical brick and mortars in the state that have either a direct or an adjacent relationship to cannabis in one way or another, licensed and compliant. But that's the only way that I was ever going to be able to tell myself, hey, you're going to have any form of credibility to be able to talk, to even be able to share a conversation or a dialogue with gentlemen like yourselves that slunked it out and sweated out and slugged it out for years and still continue to do so. And that was what made us, it made the decision to join the MICIA a lot easier. Let's just put it that way. That was not a hard decision. And on top of that, also, because we're a small grower, we only make X amount. So we kind of can figure out where we'd like to see it, who we'd like to work with. And it's not like a spray and pray method. It's more of like a utilization and just making sure that what we're doing is fair for the people that are brave enough to enter the retail space. That was long, guys. You all right?
It's very, very good, man. Awesome, man. That's a very good rundown, I think, of the company. I think it's good for people to just kind of, I don't know, man. It kind of humanizes it more for people to know about like how a company's founded, like what people do and stuff. And for what it's worth, I think the cultivars that you guys came out with too, like super, a lot of Durban Poison, a lot of high in THCV and, you know, like real medicine cannabinoids, you know, like, so that's, I've always appreciated people that were willing to do shit like that. Cause the market's not necessarily about that shit as much, you know what I mean? But it's, you know, I've always really liked those strains, and I'm just glad to see them around even, you know?
Yeah, I haven't seen Durban Poison in a long time. And that's one back in the early caregiver days. I've got a buddy down here where I'm from that has grown it outdoor for years, mainly because it finishes really early typically. So while everybody else is waiting until like closer to Halloween, he's already got cured bud on October 1st with that one. So that was always a slapper outdoor.
Oh, it's a phenomenal strain. My favorite part about it is just how, like, it's somewhat difficult to take photographs of depending on what you're looking at, because it just grows all over the place, right? And that was another thing you mentioned, like the time. That's something that we were really looking at being unique, or at least trying to separate ourselves. Like, we don't do a 60-inch hop model. We do a, hey, what's this plant telling us? Like, let's look at it. We're able to look at each individual plant in the room and make the decision. And with those colloquial sativas that we're a part of, it becomes something that we have to do. If we didn't do it, it wouldn't be the product in its truest light. Like, or if we just like set a rigid schedule for it. Like, I know a lot of outfits, especially the bigger ones, like they have to adhere to a 60-inch hop or a very specific schedule just to meet the back end demands or the bottom line demands.
For sure. Sorry. I thought I was on mute.
Yeah.
Cool, man. So yeah, one of the things too, I think with that's a market challenge, right? And so I think one of the things that we've all kind of touched on is like, you guys did come into market at kind of out of a nuts time. So I think like basically the entire time you guys have been selling weed, you know, the market's been going down, downward spiral. Yeah, just being like, I guess kind of crazy. I guess talk about that a little bit. And then one thing too that I wanted to get out there and talk about is like the remediation stuff. I know you've talked to me when we first met, we talked about kind of the willow, and you have a lot of the same kind of questions about it that I do, and just kind of maybe talk about that. I know that we talk about the willow machine a lot, but just kind of like your experience with it, what you think, and then kind of just like how, because there's a lot of pressure in this market, in any market. You're not trying to necessarily just like take an L on something, because you know, some shit happened or, you know, like that room got out of hand or something. So I guess like, just kind of talk to people about that and maybe, you know, even like the economics of that and just kind of help people kind of understand what that actually looks like for somebody who's not like a huge, like High Life Farms loses a room, like who gives a shit, you know what I mean? They've got like, like, you know what I'm saying? They're just like relative, like so many, you know, that for them to eat up that cost or whatever. But like when Highlands Grow loses a room, like that's probably like a big fucking deal, man. You know what I mean? Like that's like a lot of money that just got like wiped off the books, and you know, that can't actually be like a real thing that happens, right? So like,
oh gosh, no, I need to go find like some wood to knock on, man, and put that omen out there in the world. So yeah, very, very happy to discuss both. We'll start with the market. You know, just being able to see the writing on the wall immediately when we started, I think that kind of got our, it adjusted our scope, right? Like just like what our expectations were. And a lot of this struggle comes with just being able to like digest the fact that things were the way they were and they are now the way they are now. But to us, those are the same. Like they're the exact same for us. So we don't necessarily have that overhead difference from before and after. But I will say it still has been a challenge from just making sure that, you know, like not even necessarily that you yourself feel like the deal was fair. Like I don't think anyone would try and make a deal that they themselves didn't think was fair for at least themselves in the long run, but really for the end user. Like I'm looking at it like from a geographic standpoint, like we'll use Monroe for an example, right? There's two spots right across the street from each other in Monroe. Does it benefit me to go as a small grow and try and sell the same exact product for the same exact price to both of those places? Sure, maybe, depending on my scale. But like to them, I'd rather figure out which one I would want to do business with, have it make sense, come to that determination between the both of us, and then go with them there and have that differentiator in that area. That's something that we're obviously a little bit more capable of accomplishing just because of our scale and us being a little bit smaller. But I'll say this too. I mean, the hard part is just the making it even, like the making it like it seems like for whatever reason, like the convenience aspect has also made its way onto the invoices, you know, like I have X amount to spend. Like, so let's just make sure it's this amount. Like, well, potentially 50 different purchasers, that amount might be different. Like someone who spends $5,000 with whoever, like that might be $10,000 worth of value with someone else, but you just in that moment establish that different value with that person. That's going to vary from harvest to harvest too, unless you're operating off of a price matrix, but I won't bore you to death with those. Now the remediation side. So this is something that I'm specifically really passionate about because my first experience coming into it, like I'll never forget, you know, I moved back to Michigan, someone handed me a LiveWell 8th and they're like, what's lime? Like, why is there lime in this? You know, like what's up with that? Like, why I don't want to smoke lime or de-limer. And this is a year and a half ago. It was right there. It's right on the package. I don't know if either of you have reviewed that, but like a lot of that type of stuff is just being able to answer that question to the consumer. So like we post our QR code with our COAs and as well as our terp profile. If that batch received a terp test, which it should. Just so at any point in time, you can take one of our rolls or our eights and you can scan the QR code and pull up the COA. With the remediation aspect, like so in my past life in construction equipment rentals, I ran a ton of dehumidifiers, air scrubbers, fans, you name it, even ozone machines, right? The ozone. So we can talk specifically about the ozone because that's the one that I looked across the entire landscape of how to try and save failed flower. And here's the bottom line that I've determined. And the one is a direct quote from someone else, and I'll give him credit off air because I don't want to boast his ego here. A failed test doesn't hit, like the biggest cost of that is morale, hands down. Doesn't matter if it's $1,500 for the batch or however much, it's literally morale. Like you as a grow need to take that, own it, and figure out what happened, put in place corrective measures and go and march forward. But the second aspect of is that no matter what you do, that product is vehemently, like, it's not worth as much as it was before. I don't care what you say. Like, it's just not. All right. So we did a broad scale look at, you know, at third party remediation through like a Sapphire Farms, or someone else. Like, we did a look at some of the folks that use radiation, and ultimately we ended up settling on owning a willow just for the sake of the oxidation process or the ozone process, which to me, hands down, better than sprays, better than radiation, better than any of these other unethical tricks that go down. And here's why. We use it. I used it for 9 years myself. I used it for 10 years. Have either of you bought or ever driven in a used car? Right? Like, it's
absolutely,
it's, they run ozone in there because of the ability to pull all the microbes or pull the scent or pull the, so that's why they do it. Now, it's foolish to assume that process is something that you would want to rely on, right? Like, you don't rely, I don't want to rely on that. That's a fail safe, but in order for a fail safe to go into fruition, you have to fail. Like, so to me, companies that are doing that, and I think that maybe they've already started to see that a little bit too, is just that product afterwards, after use in a willow, is not worth as much as before. And that's I will go on record saying that. But out of all the options, give me willow product over sprays, rad. Give me willow product over people that are throwing the good stuff on top and just praying that the test goes the way that they want it to go. Give me willow product over just any unknown in that capacity, because at least I have that accompanied with a COA that shows that it's been wiped clean from microbial.
Yeah, so I have a couple follow-ups. So the value on that, like, when you say, like, so are you saying you don't value it as much? Because, like, what I suspect is happening is that other people are like, man, got into some shit. Thanks, Willow. Gonna sell it for the exact same fucking, because some people might not, like, some people, like, they'll have these systemic problems and they'll be like, oh man, I wonder if this is the one test in the last 9 months that's going to be clean. It's not, right? So they just willow it, like, you know, like willy-nilly basically, and then send it out for testing. So you know, there's no remediation on it. Nobody knows, or there's no remediation warning. So, like, is that just something that you found that if you just value it less, which is good business ethics, and I agree with that? Or do you think, like, you can actually just, like, look at the product and smell it and just taste it and just, because, like, that's the thing, is, like, we hypothesize, obviously, that I think it makes it, like, not as good as if you didn't have to do that for a lot of reasons. But, is it, like, super noticeable like that? Or are you just saying, like, ethically, you just can't put the same, like, you personally, your company can't put the same price on that conceptually as somebody, you know what I mean?
Little column A, little column B, like, both for sure. I think, there is a learning curve with using that machine too. It's not just like you just put the product in there and then it's done. All right, it's good to go. Like, let's get it out there. Like, so the people that are trying to keep that value, like, really, it doesn't matter. You had a failed test. You've lost time, money, and product itself. Like, you're already behind. I, for one, think that, the biggest thing that you're going to be able to see is, like, sometimes it looks like it's been, like, treated with, like, a razor. Like, it just looks like it was, like, you really can't differentiate sometimes between a tumbler and a willow, if that makes sense. Just the way that they kind of, like, you can tell between hand trimmed and tumbled. Now I know that I had some recent problems with just, like, the outward claim that they said, like, oh, it doesn't affect potency or terpene. And then on the, you know, the page after that, it says, like, we did a study and it was, like, by a 0.11 or 0.11 or 0.3 difference. And you and I, everyone in this call knows, like, you know, 0.11, 0.11 with terpenes is a pretty significant impact potentially, depending on what you're working with. So, I also will say I was very interested to see those boys at the, at Canicon and see, like, the reaction. They were, like, three booths down from Viridis though. So, you know, they had to keep a little space between those guys. But to me, the bulk stuff too is, it, you'll be able to see it immediately, but the nose on it too, is, I haven't seen a difference between the nose before and after, but a lot of that's also going to affect you're going to take into consideration with your dry cure process. Like, that's the fun part, right? So even if it's viewed as like a silver bullet for getting a test passed flower, it's not, because there's still so many other things that you have to be doing and dialing in like that. And if you've already failed, then really ultimately it's like a lifesaver, if anything, a very flimsy one at best.
Yeah, for sure, man. And we definitely want to link up and try to figure out a way to test this, like to
run before and after.
Yeah, before and after. And I understand this is like a very costly endeavor, but like, well, I'd like to figure it out, because I suspect that there probably has to be some even just what they admit is not awesome. And I can't imagine that they would admit, like, you know, they probably ran like 100 of these tests and shared like the most favorable, you know what I mean? They're not going to be like, oh man,
show the work, right?
Yeah. Also, like, from what I understand, and this is kind of what you were describing, like it's a process, right? The Willow machine. It's not like, cause that's how people like me have been making it seem like what you described, where it's like, yeah, you just put all the mids in there, you press the button, it fucking comes out in a half hour. But like, you know, you have to NASA that shit. You have to dial it in, and there's like, it's a different time for different, like someone was telling me, like, depending on how bad you failed the test, like, it'll determine like the duration and like the intensity. So, you know, like, it's possible that even when Willow is doing this shit, like, that describes like that they're not getting a lot of terpene loss, it's possible that they're just running these tests on like they're like beating it the easiest in the Willow, you know, just like, you know, super, super delicate touch or something, you know, like, there's just no way to know.
I think our standpoint, like in the community, like at least like from one thing that a lot of these, like, especially like, you know, you guys, like the high caliber processors have really started to uncover, is just that like the toys that they require a certified operator, right? Like, so something like that, like you have to learn how to use it. You have to dial it in, and you have to be competent. It's not. So like add that to the list of concerns on top of what you're trying to do with daddy's money, right? Like it's a lot of fun.
For sure, man. It's a wild market out there. So that kind of leads me to one of the last big things I wanted to talk to you about is with an increased market, like just the competition and just the pricing, it is what it is and everything. Like, you know, like there's starting to be like just the things have switched, right? Like before you guys came on, like when the system first started, like all the power was for the cultivators, right? Like for when I first started like buying for a metric dispensary, the plug or the hookup or the favor was even being able to buy the weed, and it was like $3,200, you know, and like it didn't fucking matter what it looked like or what it tested at. None of that shit. It wasn't branded. It showed up in like a fucking turkey bag. They didn't give you Mylars. I had to buy my own Mylars, and you know what I mean? Like, and that's, and that's how it was. And like, if you didn't like it, like it didn't fucking matter, you know? Mm-hmm. And so now we have a scenario where like literally every day, every store, my purchaser is basically inundated. You know what I mean? Like, can't even take a shit without one of us popping out trying to sell them weed, you know?
Trade samples every day.
Every goddamn day.
Our staff gets, you know, an eighth pretty much every day, or a gram of concentrate, or a couple of pre-rolls.
Yeah, just for showing up.
When I started purchasing at Meds Cafe when they opened in March of 20, I remember pounds being as high as like 4,200. But also the game was trying to find product that was available. Nobody was on LeafLink really, because everybody wanted to make sure that their homie store got the limited product that they did have, you know? So it was rough for a while, especially for edibles and concentrates.
Oh my God.
Carts. I remember a time where literally nobody in Michigan had carts for a while. Like, unreal.
Very well. Yeah. It's, you know, it's fun too, because I just made a trip out to Denver recently, and just to try and get a view of like how the dispensaries were working over there. I know like a lot of times Michigan, sometimes we look to Colorado for like a what's next kind of thing. I think those days might be gone. I'm gonna be honest with you. I think those days might be gone, because we have just become like this insane work ethic, just skew driven culture. I was out there. I bought, I mean, they had nothing on the shelves, literally nothing. And this is across multiple dispensaries, but just barren. And then you buy something and they hand it to you and there's no testing data. There's no weight. There's nothing. It's in a pop top. Like, this is, that's something that's actively happening in 2022. And the place where a lot of people give credit to, like, make, like setting this genie out of the lamp, so to speak. But when you come here, I mean, you go to even some of these really small outfits and you look and they just have a million SKUs. Like, there's so much variety. And I attribute a lot of that to just like the Michigan work ethic too. Like, we're just crazy. We have that automotive, that production mindset across a lot of the, just the different cultural, like the blue collar aspect of it. But too, just like an individuality across multiple SKUs. I mean, you would be, like, the user experience, the end user experience can be very, very fine-tuned, curated, and cared for right now. Like, if you want to find some specific stuff, you can go in and find it right now at a lot more places than you used to be able to.
No, for sure, man. And I think one of the things that's happening is, like, the retailers are starting to get, like, a little bit more, like, cutthroat and savagey about it. And, like, you know, we're hearing stuff of, like, different, like, pay-to-play schemes and, like, even some of these big stores, like, they'll try to come at you like they're like fucking Walmart or something. And they'll like tell you what, I don't know. So do you want to talk about that at all? Like, some of the stuff that you've seen that you don't like, or stuff that like the consumer should know about, so they understand a little bit like how it is.
Sure. I mean, I would assume every consumer that, like, the ones that actually, I'd say, like, the ones that look at the label, right? Like, you look at the label, you like understand what you're buying. You're not just there for the weed, which is fine. If you're going there just to get some weed and have some fun, go ahead. You know, you have that option now. I look at a lot of these, well, and I'll also say, gentlemen, I am of the mind that we will have Kirkland Signature cannabis or great value cannabis in our lifetimes, our futures. We will see that
soon.
Until otherwise. But what confuses me ultimately is a lot of these larger outfits, they are doing a lot of product swapping purchasing. I equate it to, like, just obviously bartering, right? The bartering system. And that's to say, like, hey, this vertically integrated business, we have a grow, we have a processor, we have a set of dispensaries. Okay, so this other vertically integrated businesses who has all three, like, all right, we'll trade you products for our shelves so that we're at a net zero, but we have a variety or we have more on our shelves. And to me, I don't know. I always look at it as this idea, like, hey, if everyone's doing it, no one's doing it. Like that kind of mentality. And I think a lot of, over the last few days, as I've been trying to think more and more about it, and I've been thinking about, like, what's in it for them. A lot of it has to do with that inventory that you report to your bank every week or every month. And just like them being able to see actually that it's moved, right? Like that it's circulating. So like there is a benefit in that capacity so that your bank who is investing in you, or, you know, you're running all of your transactions through, still sees some sort of, movement. Current, some flow.
Bro, right? That's perfect. They're juicing the revenue. Like, they don't know how, they're not running a real fucking business. That's what I mean. Like, these guys are all doing like borderline American greed fucking Ponzi schemes. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to their rich fucking uncle or like some business Chad, some guy they know who owns a car wash or some shit. And they show them like this prospectus that's like absolutely fucking insane. Like talking about like $2,800 pound or some crazy bullshit and like, you know, a 6 month payout or like, you know, some crazy shit. And now the time has come to produce that and they can't. So they have to do all these weird ass schemes like what you're describing. And so I didn't understand this at all, everybody, like the first time Eric described it to me, because I'm not like the necessarily like an economist, you know, or like even retail. Retail's not even like my I mean, I have a lot of experience in retail and have run, I think, successful cannabis retail. But it's not like I didn't go to school for that shit or necessarily like that's not my thing. So I didn't really like understand it. But now as you describe it now, like especially the, you know, kind of the layman's term, like that's 100% what's going on. You know, it's like people like are playing this shit like all the time, just like trading their fucking mids that nobody wants among, like, you know, among these stores. But if the only thing on your shelves is other people's dirty mids, like eventually it's all going to move, because if you have a store, you know what I'm saying, man? Like,
yeah, no, it's creative, A+ for creativity. And I think that a lot of other, let me put it to you this way. that works until it doesn't. Like right. until you get to a point where there's a rejection or like one side feels like the other side is really kind of taking some liberties or, you know, in some cases it could just be a scale. Again, you have someone that has 14 stores, someone that has 10, we're not able to keep up with what you're trying to do. Or, mm-hmm. So I would say just like the way that I encourage it is have a system for your store. Like what lands on your shelves, like know about it. Like it shouldn't just be arriving there because of some tax loophole or some inventory or banking loophole. It should be arriving there because you made the concerted effort of wanting it for your patrons, for your patients. Like that's or if you're trying to make a buck, we get that too, right? Like everyone here, who isn't, right? But my mindset will always be that if our customers are taken care of, and the spreadsheets will look fantastic.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah, for sure, man. So I think that's a very good perspective, man. And I really appreciate your I like your viewpoint on it. I think that that's very refreshing. And I think that not everybody is at that right now. You know, people are basically being kind of scumbags about most things when they get an opportunity, unfortunately. But you know, it's good to know that you guys are holding out for, you know, doing things right. And you know, we definitely really appreciate that, man. Like that's what the industry is supposed to be about. And I think that that you all and basically almost every other MCIA member is trying to do that and trying to have an industry that represents all of us, which is, I think most of us are people that want to have this industry and this space be somewhere that we can all have sustainable jobs and livings and stuff for our family and create good jobs for others and help create value for these brands and this market, you know? So I think, props to you guys for pushing along, especially for taking it right now, getting kind of roughed around a little bit with everybody else, man. You know, like it's definitely an interesting time to be doing business. So definitely we're gonna wrap it up. And then I guess I want to give each of you guys an opportunity to just kind of like leave any final thoughts or any announcements or anything. I do want to encourage everybody to go to neverremediated.com, especially coming off of this episode. In fact, Eric, we're going to get with you and like, let's do some, we'll do some stuff to kind of strengthen this. We think it's an important part of the piece is consumer education on this stuff. And this would be like a consumer facing kind of website where people can go and learn information. I also want to give a shout out for the Mid-Michigan Cannabis Professional Group. It's a great opportunity for people working in the industries, especially in Mid-Michigan, but elsewhere, young people to get associated and affiliated with people that are going to help them, advocate for themselves and get a good position in the industry and like teach them how to develop their skills professionally and kind of grow with that. And that's one of the big things that we want to support too with the show is to have a healthy industry that values employees, which I've always heard great things about working over there at Highlands, man, from everybody I've ever talked to. So we appreciate that as well. And so I just encourage everyone to continue to grow, ask questions, you know, like advocate for yourself and others around you. And those are all my announcements. But yeah, just thanks again, Eric and Kyle. I'll turn it over to you, man.
To add on to your point about the Mid-Michigan Cannabis Professionals, I just wanted to say September 8th is the next mixer event that we're having at the old Green Dot Stables at the border of Lansing and East Lansing, just a little bit south of Frandor. So if you're interested, come on out.
Oh, thank you, gentlemen, very much for having me on here. I mean, you gave credence to, I mean, our team is exceptional. We're grateful to be a part of it. A big thing of ours is just that like professional cannabis is a privilege. And that's something that we look to uphold. We're not perfect. We make a million mistakes, but what we'll do is we'll fix all million of them and try and prevent that from happening in the future. Just kind of get better before we get bigger. And that's my message or my call to action to everyone here is just, if you're considering scaling your business up larger, like just do a real honest audit of your current operation. Look inward, figure out like, hey, is this the move or is this a Band-Aid? Is this duct tape? Is this bubble gum? Or is this something that I want to do and I'm going to knock it out of the park because I'm doing it the way it should be? or the way that it's going to be coming correct, so to speak. And then from a community standpoint too, just everybody, there's a lot of rumblings or just morale with a lot of these different termination cases all coming across the board. So like, just remember, you know, one closed door is another open door, another opportunity for everyone here. And if you weren't in the right place before, then we can, hey, reach out and let's figure out if you want to find the right place. Because one of the benefits of us just being a cultivator is that that's only so many SKUs, right? It's just flower. So for all these other folks that are trying to make it or advance their business, please, by all means, reach out to me and I'll have a conversation with you, an honest one, where you're able to just kind of figure out where you're at and where you want to go.
Awesome, man. Thanks.
For sure, man. No, that's good advice. And I think definitely we're seeing a lot of this kind of shit play out right now. So, yeah, thanks again so much for your time, man. I really, really appreciate it. It was a blast having you on. And we'll see everybody in a couple weeks.